Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. House of Fidelity by Justin Baer is a work of business history and financial journalism about Fidelity Investments and the Johnson family, the private dynasty that built and retained control of one of the most influential firms in American finance. The book traces Fidelity from its 1946 founding by Edward C. Johnson Tyd through the expansion led by Edward Ned Johnson III and the later leadership of Abigail Johnson. Its purpose is not only to recount corporate growth, but to explain how Fidelity helped change ordinary Americans' relationship to investing. Baer connects the rise of mutual funds, money market products, 41-pike administration, direct distribution, star portfolio managers, and low-cost investing to the strategic choices of a secretive family-owned company. The result is both an institutional history and a study of power, succession, innovation, and control inside a private firm whose influence on public financial life has been unusually large. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Fidelity turned mutual funds into a mainstream investing vehicle. Kia, a central subject of House of Fidelity, is the movement of investing from an elite activity into a more widely accessible habit. When Edward C. Johnson II founded Fidelity in 1946, the investment world was still shaped by brokers, personal relationships, and institutions that mainly served wealthy clients. Baer positions Fidelity as one of the companies that helped make pooled investment products familiar to middle-class households. And mutual funds allowed individuals to buy professionally managed portfolios without selecting every security themselves. And Fidelity became unusually aggressive in marketing and expanding these products. And the significance is not simply that the company sold funds, but that it helped normalize the idea that ordinary savers could participate directly in capital markets. This changed the economic role of households, because retirement preparation and wealth accumulation became tied more closely to market performance. Baer treats this shift as a structural change in American finance, not just as a company success story. Fidelity benefited from the trend, but it also shaped the infrastructure, language, and expectations around retail investing. Secondly, the Johnson family preserved private control while running a national financial institution. The book gives substantial attention to the unusual governance structure behind Fidelity. Unlike many financial giants that became publicly traded corporations, Fidelity remained closely associated with Johnson family control. Baer uses this fact to examine the advantages and tensions of private ownership at large scale. Family control could allow long-term decision-making, secrecy, and strategic patience, especially when the company entered new businesses or endured difficult markets. At the same time, it created questions about succession, internal authority, and the relationship between personal loyalty and professional management. The transitions from Edward C. Johnson Tyd to Ned Johnson, and later to Abby Johnson, are important because they show how family leadership had to be repeatedly legitimized inside a complex organization. The story is therefore not merely about inheritance. It is about how a private dynasty maintained command over a company that served millions of customers and played a major role in retirement finance. Baer highlights the contradiction at the heart of Fidelity, a firm deeply embedded in public markets, but governed through a notably private family structure. Thirdly, the company expanded from fund management into retirement infrastructure. House of Fidelity emphasizes that Fidelity became powerful not only through portfolio management, but through its position in the machinery of retirement saving. The growth of employer-sponsored defined contribution plans, especially 401k plans, created a major opening for firms that could administer accounts, provide investment menus, and maintain customer relationships at scale. Under Ned Johnson, Fidelity developed this area into a crucial business. This mattered because the retirement system in the United States was shifting away from traditional pensions and toward individual accounts. Fidelity was able to stand at the center of that transition, gaining access to enormous pools of worker savings while also expanding demand for its funds and services. Baer shows that this was a business model innovation as much as a product innovation. Fidelity was no longer only trying to outperform competitors in fund returns. It was building distribution channels, record-keeping capacity, and customer access. The implication is that modern investment firms became powerful by controlling financial infrastructure, not just by making investment decisions. Fourthly, star managers. Performance culture and scandals reveal the risks of Fidelity's model. The rise of Peter Lynch and other prominent portfolio managers is part of the book's broader account of Fidelity reputation. Lynch, best known for his tenure managing the Magellan Fund, became a symbol of active management at a time when skilled stock picking could attract public attention and large inflows. Baer uses this history to show how Fidelity cultivated a culture that valued performance, competition, and entrepreneurial energy inside the firm. That culture helped the company grow, but it also carried risks. A system built around aggressive performance seeking, broker relationships, and internal rivalry could produce conflicts of interest or lapses in judgment. The book discusses controversies including trading-related scandals in which some employees accepted improper benefits from brokers. These episodes are important because they complicate any simple account of fidelity as only a democratizing force. Bear presents innovation and misconduct as parts of the same institutional environment, a fast-moving, high-pressure company that gained influence by challenging old Wall Street channels, yet still had to confront the ethical hazards of financial intermediation. Lastly, Abby Johnson's leadership shows Fidelity adapting to fee pressure and digital finance. The later sections of the Fidelity story concern a changed investment landscape. By the time Abby Johnson emerged as the company leading figure, Fidelity faced pressures different from those that shaped earlier decades. Index funds, exchange-traded funds, fee compression, regulatory scrutiny, and technology platforms were altering how investors judge financial firms. Bear presents Fidelity's response as a continuation of its historical pattern. It tried to protect its franchise by entering or reshaping new markets rather than relying only on legacy strengths. Zero-fee index funds reflected the industry move toward lower costs and the challenge posed by passive investing. Interest in Bitcoin and digital assets showed a willingness to explore areas outside traditional mutual fund management. These developments also underline the difficulty of preserving family-led authority in a more transparent, technology-driven financial system. Abby Johnson's era demonstrates that Fidelity influence did not rest on a single innovation from the past. The company had to repeatedly reinterpret what access, scale, and customer trust meant as financial markets became cheaper, faster, and more digital. In conclusion, House of Fidelity is best suited for readers interested in financial history, Wall Street institutions, mutual funds, retirement policy, and family-controlled businesses. It offers practical value by explaining how investment products and distribution systems shape household behavior, not just corporate profits. Readers who use mutual funds, workplace retirement plans, or low-cost brokerage services can gain a clearer sense of how those everyday financial tools emerge from competitive choices, regulatory openings, and institutional ambition. The intellectual benefit lies in Bear's combination of corporate biography and market history. Rather than treating Fidelity as an isolated company, he connects its internal leadership struggles to the broader transformation of American saving and investing. The book stands out from many finance histories because its subject is both powerful and unusually private. Many books about Wall Street focus on public banks, trading crises, hedge funds, or famous investors. This one examines a family-owned firm whose influence came through mutual funds, retirement administration, customer access, and quiet scale. Its distinctiveness is the pairing of the Johnson family saga with the development of modern retail investing. Readers looking for a technical investment manual should look elsewhere. But those seeking a well-researched institutional narrative about how ordinary Americans became market participants will find it especially relevant. If you would like to support Justin Bear, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.